Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast brought to you by Moneyball.com.au. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_bball. The season is, it's very close. We're getting there. And what we're going to do today in today's podcast is touch on a bit of fantasy news that's happened over the last couple of days, but also go through and prognosticate and predict some things that we think are going to happen during the season. So some award winners, some bold predictions, and just generally just talk some shit about the NBA. And to do that, I am joined by All-Star 5's one and only Matt Smith. Matt, how are you going?
I'm doing very well, Josh, and I don't know how I'm the one and only considering there's five of us.
Well, you're not the one and only. You're the one and only Matt Smith from All-Star 5. And I just wanted to make sure, it's good to have you on because I was a little bit concerned that you weren't gonna make it to the podcast today. After all, you did remove your rearview mirror from your car just to prevent yourself from looking back.
That's right. Who needs rearview mirrors? Who needs mirrors in general? But
just one tunnel vision. That's the way to go.
What's Jimmy Butler thinking?
I get the feeling that Jimmy Butler doesn't think a huge amount a lot of the time. That's just me. I just think that sometimes he's a little. He might not be the brightest guy at times, but you know, it was a pretty funny headline when I saw the notification come up on my phone. Jimmy Butler removes rearview mirror. Okay, what's happening? It clearly has no fantasy impact, apart from someone who tweeted at me, I think it was Super Buckwild, who said he's dropping Jimmy Butler down for pure stupidity and maybe the risk of more injuries due to accidents.
Fair call. Can't argue with
that. Now, Matt, what we're going to do today, actually, before we talk about what we're going to do, let's get your Twitter handle for anyone who doesn't know, and you finally got to the 1,000 follower mark, and I tweeted out the other day that whoever was follower number 1,000, we were going to give them a shout-out on the podcast, and then you wisely tweeted back that means once you were stuck on 999, no one was going to want to be follower 999. So we're going to shout out follower 999 and follower 1000, and it's at RF Vivek and at Freeze Lin, the two guys who got you over that mythical 1000 barrier. So shout out to those guys, and shout out to you for getting over 1000 followers, Matt.
Yes, thank you, Josh. I'm only about 4,563 behind you, and 62 million behind Justin Bieber, so I'm getting there.
You're coming for him. Now, what is your Twitter handle so people can get you up to Bieber's level?
I don't know if I want to be on Bieber's level, but you can follow me on Twitter at @SmanSports. All your fantasy news, information, injuries, stats, quirky stats. And last season on busy days, I was trying to tweet out like which players are injured. So when we get 10 and 12 games on a day, and you know, you'll get drip tweets coming through and dribs and drabs saying this player's out and that player's out and this player's out, and crossing half an hour. I don't know about everyone else, but I forget. So what I'll try and do is just condense them into one tweet, and then I'll send that out 5 or 10 minutes before the first game of the night. So I'll try and do that again this season, just to make it a little bit easier for you guys when you're setting your lineups. And if there's anything else like either Josh or I can do in terms of Twitter and making it easy for you guys with your fantasy teams, let us know and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I should hopefully be a little bit more active on Twitter during the games this season. That remains to be seen, but hopefully I'll be a little bit more active in getting the tweets out. But Matt, we're gonna do season preview stuff, predictions, prognostications, as I mentioned. But before we get into that, a couple of news and notes to go over from what's happened in the last couple of days. Tristan Thompson has finally signed his deal with the Cleveland Cavaliers. 5 years and too much money, I think, is probably the best way of putting that figure. Don't know why it took so long when this was the deal that was basically rumored, or you know, it's been bandied about for such a long time. It is clearly too much money. The Cavs are in a situation though where they had no way of replacing what he does. What does it mean for fantasy? And I'm hoping the answer is nothing.
Yeah, it does mean nothing because he's A, not very good in terms of fantasy. He's boards and points at the best of times, 8-8. But he's also stuck behind Kevin Love, Timofey Mozgov, Anderson Varejao's another body, not necessarily healthy, but he's another body there this season. And LeBron James can go and play the four as well. So Tristan Thompson will play 25 minutes off the bench, eight points, eight rebounds, and that's about all. So outside of 200 deep leagues, maybe, but before that, don't even think about him.
Yeah, that's the right spot. Look, if he gets 35 minutes, then he is fantasy relevant. But in 25 minutes, he's not. And what it's also going to do is it's going to put a little bit of a cramp on Timofey Mozgov's value. Because I thought, yeah, Mozgov might push 30 minutes. But we saw last season that those guys played 25 and 26 minutes apiece for the season. And it meant Mozgov had really a pretty low ceiling, that he might have occasional big game. But he sat down the stretch in so many games last season that, to me, Mozgov is not a 10-team must-own player, and he's a borderline 12-team league guy. It's completely dependent on needs. How do you see Mozgov now with this news of Thompson?
It's still interesting, because he's not a bad player when he can get some minutes.
He's a really good player, but the minutes are the problem.
One of these guys is just so inconsistent, though. Like, and it's dependent on matchups. Like, one night, play against a big guy, and he can go. We saw in the playoffs, like, he had 20 points in a couple of those games, and then the next night he's on the bench and he's got 2 points next to his name. So I think I've still got him in the listener league, or one of the ESPN leagues that I'm in. But I just can't quite find anyone to pick up at the moment. And also the Cavs play on opening night, so I'm kind of holding him for that.
You definitely want to hold him for that.
The ball. Is that you got? They got the balls. Your team.
You know, I probably should know that, but I'm going to bring it up now. I'm pretty certain you're correct. I know they play on opening night, and yeah, they are. That's the first game. It's the Bulls. That is the first game, along with Pistons Hawks.
Yeah, so I've kind of been holding him just for that, because then you'll have to come up against Noah and Gasol. So I think there's a chance he could play, you know, 26 to 30 minutes and maybe get me off to a hot start with that first game. But we'll see how that goes, and maybe I'm pretty sure then the next night they might have Memphis. And once again, that's a Marc Gasol, Zach Randolph situation. Yep. So I'm going to give him a couple of games, see how they go. But yeah, I'm not sticking to him long term, that's for sure.
All right. So the other big news that came out was the Tyreke Evans injury. He had the knee arthroscope. He's going to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. So that puts his return sometime in December. For people who haven't had their drafts yet, what do we do with Tyreke? And for people who have had their drafts and drafted Tyreke, what's the move there? I'm going to say that if you haven't had your draft, it depends a little bit on format. If you've got an IR spot, if you're a roto league, if you've got quite a deep bench, then he obviously slides. How far does he slide? Does he slide outside the top 100?
Well, like you said, it depends on your format. I've drafted in three leagues, and I've got him in all three leagues. I drafted the league last night, and I picked him around pick 80. At that stage, there wasn't a timetable, so I was still thinking maybe 4 to 6.
Yep.
Then this morning, our time, it came out it was 6 to 8, so a little bit longer. I still don't mind taking him around that sort of 80 to 100, as long as you've got some guys on the top of your roster who are stable and you can trust and rely on. Tyreke Evans is one of my favorite players coming to this season, with the up-tempo offense there at the Pelicans, and basically, they've got no one else after him and Anthony Davis. So I really like his season-long outlook, and now his second half of the season outlook. And I think he could be a top 50 player come the second half of the season. He was a top 30 guy last season, in the last couple of months. So, yeah, I'm sort of stashing him and really hoping that he's going to go big come December, January.
I don't think he needs to be dropped in any real league, unless you're in a situation where you've got maybe a no bench league. But even then, I think you've just got to wait and see how the first couple of weeks play out. And I've mentioned this number of times. In so many of my leagues, I lose the first week or two, because so much weird stuff happens in those first couple of weeks. It's stuff that is not generally in line with the season-long production of guys. You'll have guys who have red-hot shooting or ice-cold shooting, doing things that they're not used to doing. A lot of weird stuff happens. So you almost get these odd losses to start the season, stuff that doesn't really make sense with the rest of your team and the rest of your season. So I'm okay. I'm definitely not making a reactionary drop move now, unless we're talking a 6-team league, maybe an 8-team league. The Pelicans are completely undermanned, though. They're going to be without Omer Asik, Alexey Ajinsa, Norris Cole, Tyreke Evans. Luke Babbitt is still got an issue with his hamstring. Quincy Pondexter is going to be out with his knee, and Drew Holiday is going to be on a 15-minute limit. Point guards, Nate Robinson was signed. What do we do with him?
Yeah, well, this is another interesting one. He played 26 minutes today against the Magic, scored 18 points off the bench with three threes. It did go into overtime. For me, he's not quite standard league relevant. 12-team leagues is close, but I think there's a few guys ahead of him. I'm just not sure in terms of A, minutes, and B, consistency. So probably inside the top 150, 140 for me, not quite. But if you're outside the top 150, so we're sort of looking at maybe deep 12-team leagues, he's probably worth a fly for the first 2 to 4 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's where he's going to have value, in that first, well, I don't even think, yeah, first, yeah, four weeks or so. And he's going to be a guy who gets threes, he's going to score, he's going to get you low-level assists, but it's not going to be a huge amount else that Nate Robb does. And that's something you need to pay attention to as well, that you got to watch what he... Not what he does, because he's going to be a points guy, and that might be really useful because it's not easy to get points off the waiver wire. But just don't expect him to go out there and be 17-7 or something like that, because that's just not what his game is. If you look back at what his previous performances have been like in his career, he's a points guy. Now I think for the first week, if you're looking for guys that he fits inside that top 150 for the first week, and he's sort of right about there, but long-term value, there's not much. So I'm not dropping someone who I think's got long-term season value to grab a guy like Robinson. Now, if you drafted a guy like Jared Sullinger, then I'm all for dropping Jared Sullinger and grabbing Nate Robinson. But there might be other guys out there who are better, and the next guy I want to talk about is a guy who is in a similar boat to Robinson, and that's John Jenkins, who was on fire yet again, but he's in a similar boat to Robinson. There's talk of Wes Matthews coming back and playing a preseason game, which to me is ludicrous, but he might come back and play. But we still don't know the status of Chandler Parsons. He hasn't played in preseason. So Jenkins is going to have a pretty big offensive opportunity to start the season, but it's limited. It might last a week. It might last 3 weeks. Out of those two guys, are you adding Robinson or are you adding Jenkins?
That's a very good question. I will probably lean Jenkins just because there's a little bit more upside, and we've seen what he can do in preseason with minutes, like his big scoring numbers. And just going back to if you haven't drafted yet, it's not as if we don't have a number of late round point guard options. So usually the cupboard's pretty bare, but we've got guys like Isaiah Cannon, Darren Collison, Nate Robinson, as you just mentioned, a couple of others. Mo Williams. In Cleveland.
Mo Williams, yep. Definitely want Mo Williams over there,
Rob. Dennis Schroeder as well from Atlanta. So there's probably four, five, six options. Even like someone like JJ Barea, once the season starts, if Deron Williams doesn't play, he could come in and get minutes. So Jeremy Lin was the other one I was thinking of as well. So yep. It's not as if we don't have options there in terms of guards and point guards. So Nate Robinson is behind most of them. In terms of point guards, I'm looking long-term in terms of your Darren Collisons, Jeremy Lins, Dennis Schroeder types before these guys.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the right way to look at it. Look, you can add these guys, but the long-term value of Nate Robin and John Jenkins is pretty low. So it depends on who you're dropping, whether you're going to make that move to grab them, but they're definitely names. Now, John Jenkins was a super deep sleeper. He's probably not so much of a sleeper now, but a lot of people still aren't going to know about him. In the next hour and a half, I've got my hometown auction draft we're doing. It'll be interesting to see if anyone actually nominates Jenkins and picks him, to see how much those guys are on the ball. I imagine they are, because some of them you've heard on this podcast before, so I imagine that John Jenkins will get a nomination and a bid. What about Chris Humphries? He's definitely got a different game than what we've seen from him in the past. He's jacking up a lot of threes. He's most likely going to be the starting power forward from what we've seen in Washington. Nene, from what they've said, he's going to be limited to strictly backup center minutes. So he's not going to play power forward really at all this season. Humphries is probably going to be the starter there. I think then they go pretty small at the four as well at other times with Otto Porter and Jarrett Dudley, who came back today from his back problem. So he's back. What do you make of Humphries? Where does he sit? Is he a guy that you want to own in a 12-team league?
Probably not quite. Just because he's very inconsistent. Look at his preseason, and he's gone 11, 11, 11, 2, and then 16. But his field goal percentage is just atrocious. It's down in the 30-odd percent. Yep. Sure, he's hitting threes. He's not getting the big rebounds that he's used to. Sure, he's got the minutes and the role. But 12 team leagues, yeah, not quite. 14 team leagues, probably. But this is the thing, like I just mentioned those point guard options there late in drafts. It seems like our big options in terms of your Chris Humphreys and these sort of guys, they're limited. So maybe if you are desperate for 6 or 8 rebounds early on in the season, he's not a bad option. But right now for me, he's probably more of a streaming guy. So who would you take, like Humphreys or someone like Jan Mahinmi at Indiana?
Well, that's very dependent because Jan Mahinmi is a free throw killer. He shot about 30% from memory from the free throw line last year, and he's going to be a big blocks guy. So he's a punt free throw block sort of guy. Humphreys is a bulk rebounder, good free throw shooter who's now had the ability to hit three. So to me, they fit completely different teams. I grabbed Mahinmi in a league. I then dropped him and grabbed Clint Capella for his short-term value for at least the first couple of games. I am reconsidering that and then maybe going back to Mahinmi. And Humphreys has value in certain situations. It's really dependent on which guy, on what stats you need from these guys. But I think that Humphreys probably has more value than Mahinmi because I don't know who else is challenging him for power forward minutes.
But are we drafting Humphreys for his rebounds or because he's all of a sudden shooting threes?
No, it's for his ability to grab rebounds. And be a good free throw percentage guy. So he can be a 78% free throw guy, and he could get you 9 rebounds a game if he plays 28 minutes. That's a possibility. And that might not be that easy to find good rebounds with good free throw percentage. It's not the easiest thing to find. But he's not must own by any, but he's must think about. You have to think about him. Like, do I add him? Because he looks like he's in for a bigger role than we've seen. He's doing a few different things. But I don't have to go. I must get Chris Humphreys.
No.
No, nobody must ever get Chris Humphreys. The last player, Matt, is one of your boys from the Suns that we want to talk about here, TJ Warren, who has been on fire in preseason. He has clearly outplayed PJ Tucker. Had been asked a few questions about this on Basketball Monster today, saying, you know, how well that Warren's played and he's clearly outplayed Tucker. Is he going to be the starter? And I thought, opening night, I don't think that Warren is the starter. But before Christmas, I think they probably make a change at some point, or Warren starts getting more minutes. How do you see the PJ-TJ situation?
Yeah, right now in the short term, PJ Tucker is still the starter. Jeff Hornacek loves his defense.
Yep.
But some of these numbers that TJ Warren has been putting up are uncharacteristic. Like, in the last 4 games, he's gone 3 steals, 3 steals, 2 steals, and 2 steals. Like, we just didn't, or maybe don't, associate those defensive numbers with TJ Warren. No. So maybe this is something that he's been working on and evolving, but, you know, I wouldn't be relying on 2 steals per game from TJ Warren. He went and had 7 assists yesterday as well, which totally random. Like, TJ Warren's at points, rebounds,
field goal
percentage. and generally a pretty good field goal percentage. But once again, he's had games like 5 of 13, 2 of 7, 5 of 12 today. So I'm not reading too much into these numbers. Once again, more of a streamer. But like you said, come December, January, excuse me, I think he definitely could take that starting role, and the Suns are in for a long, long season. There's no way they're making playoffs. So
yeah, it doesn't feel like it.
Come the second half of the season, TJ Warren's going to get big minutes one way or another.
Yeah, his upside is a little bit capped by what he does, and that's his points, rebounds, field goals, the blocks, the steals. He actually hit a 3 in preseason, which is something he's not going to do in general. He doesn't have multi-categorical upside. But he's going to look. PJ Tucker has multi-categorical upside. TJ Warren doesn't, but his numbers look sexier when you look at them in a box score, because he'll put up 15 points, he'll put up 20 points and grab 8 rebounds, and those are big numbers. I say this all the time: 20 and 8 are big numbers. They're bigger than 2 threes, 2 steals. But PJ Tucker's more likely to get you that, even though Warren's getting all these steals out of his wherever. That's not something that's likely to continue. So I still think that Warren has got upside in a 12-team league. I'm not averse to it, but he's not just becoming the starter. He's not a must own guy. And there is a difference when we say, yeah, 12 teams look at him, but he's not a guy, not must own. He's not that player. When I say must own, they're probably a top 100 player, and that's not him.
Do we want to clarify the difference between being a must own player and a should be owned player?
Yeah. Okay. So a must own player to me when I talk about it, is it's someone that you want to make sure that you're getting onto your team. And he shouldn't be sitting on the waiver wire in any league. A should be owned player means that somebody in your league should be able to find a use for this guy in that league depth. If I say he should be owned in 12 team leagues, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that every person should be putting a claim in on him. It means that some teams will find use for him. Some teams will have players that are better than him. But it doesn't necessarily have to be your team. Is that the way that you approach it?
Yeah, I tweeted this out. Was it early in the week? Just to clarify. So yeah, same. Should be owned. He should be owned somewhere in your league. Generally, that might even be like the bottom team. A must-own player is he must be owned by any team. Even if your team's top or second, find a way to get this guy in your team. So he's going to be putting up top 80, top 100 value, whatever it is. So when we say should owned, he should be owned within your league. Must-own, make sure, hopefully we'll go and find someone to drop for this guy because he's a must-own player. You must own him on your team.
And a quick shout-out to Christos Paraskevas, who tweeted us. He's at Para1978, and he says, Josh, Matt wins the competition to see how many doors you can fit in a camera shot. So I've got the door behind me, the well-known door here. Matt, you've upstaged me. You've thrown in three doors behind you there. So you have won the contest for most cream colored doors that you can fit into one shot. So congratulations to you. You didn't even know that was a contest, but you got it.
I didn't. I won. So yeah, three doors down there. Got the Commodore out the front, the Labrador in the next room. So doors all around.
I think that was thoroughly deserved. Now, just before we transition to the next part of the show, I mentioned Moneyball. The show is sponsored by Moneyball, and that's for all you Aussies and New Zealanders that want to play some daily fantasy. I have created a Red Rock Daily Fantasy League on Moneyball for opening night. It's called Red Rock Fantasy Basketball, so when you go into the lobby of Moneyball, you can see the contest there. There's already a few people that have joined up. It's a $2 contest. I'm probably going to run a few more of these and run at least one or two every day. So if you are an Australian or New Zealand resident, head across to Moneyball. Check out the Red Rock League. It's a 10-team daily fantasy league for Wednesday. Join that and can compete against me and other listeners of the podcast. And use the link on the website to sign up and help support the show. So I just wanted to get that out there. And Matt, when's your first articles coming out for Moneyball?
Don't know yet. They're still putting up their content part of the site, the blog part of the site. So if it's not within the first week, it will be very soon after. So yeah, I'll be writing, fingers crossed, two articles a week around DFS. So that should be good fun.
Yep, looking forward to seeing that. Let's move on to the season preview part, season prediction part, I think. And just a shout out to everyone who is watching this live on YouTube. We've got quite a few people watching, and that's great. I really want to encourage the people to watch live as much as possible throughout the season. It does allow you guys to interact with the show as we're doing the podcast. So yeah, congratulations to everybody who's watching. And yeah, if you've got anything you want to add or chime in or ask us as we're doing the podcast, tweet it at both of us, redrock_bball, Matt's at smansports, leave a comment on the YouTube video, whatever it is, and we can interact with you live in that way. Now, let's talk season predictions. Matt, let's start with the big one. Who's your champion? Who's your NBA champion for this season?
I'm going with the OKC Thunder. I reckon they're going to have an awesome season. They're back during the preseason. They've been averaging 111 points per game, and that's with Durant and Westbrook only averaging 25 minutes per game each. So we spoke the other week around the increase in offensive tempo and shooting threes and pace, but OKC just look so dangerous. I don't know how anyone's going to keep them under 100 points per game. As long as Durant's back healthy, Westbrook's a beast, Ibaka back to his defense best. Enes Kanter now, throw him in there. They've just got so many offensive options, and they're not bad defensively either. So it's going to be OKC for me.
Yeah, look, initially I was thinking, and my initial thought was going to be the Cleveland Cavaliers. I just don't like the injury situation. Shumpert, Irving, Love coming back. They'll probably be firing towards the end of the season, but I'm not sure that they can get over the line, and I'm worried about LeBron James. I just don't know about his do you like that one? I don't know about his back injury. It's a concern that he's had this injection early on. I know he had it last season. he's older. He's not old, but he's getting there, and he's past his athletic peak. He had a big drop-off in his field goal percentage. For as good as he was perceived in the finals last year, he actually wasn't. Like, he wasn't great. He was missing so many. Like, his field goal, do you remember what his field goal percentage was offhand? It would have been close to 40%.
Well, we can look it up. With Andre Iguodala did a fantastic job on him during the final series, and yeah, was rightly awarded MVP.
He racked up all these. He racked up all these counting stats, but he was taking bad shots. He was missing easy shots. He was doing stuff that was very un-LeBron-like. It was like you'd watch him, you know, push past someone and drive to the hoop and then miss easy layups, and he'd shoot some horrific, you know, Kobe-like percentages on big volumes of shots. And yes, he was carrying the team, but is the fact that these, you know, that his field goal percentage dropped 8%, is that a sign of some sort of decline in LeBron? That makes me go, then, okay, maybe Cleveland's not going to be the champion. I still think they'll probably be in the finals, but I think the Thunder is correct. I can't see how you can stop them. Their offense looks so good, and Durant is clearly not firing on all cylinders, and they still look that good. Westbrook looks like he looks close to the best player in the league at the moment, although Anthony Davis probably has something to say about that with his performance tonight. But Westbrook just looks incredible. He is just not on another level, because he was on another level last season, but he looks like he's even continuing that sort of play. You're right, Kanter is such a luxury for this team. Steven Adams is having big games. Serge Ibaka's back. I think he's in for a big season. I really like guys like Kyle Singler on this team, who's a great role player. Anthony Morrow's a great role player. Deion Waiters is a player. They've got guys. DJ Augustine's a pretty good player. Campaign, I reckon, is going to be really good. They've got some serious talent, OKC. I reckon they're going to be super motivated. It's going to be tough for Billy Donovan in his first season, but they're my pick as well.
Yeah, just going back to you, LeBron James. So 39.8% from the field versus Golden State.
Yeah, that's really bad.
Atlanta, 44%. Chicago, it was 40% as well. But I think that was probably just a case of fatigue and wear and tear.
But that's what I'm worried about with him, though.
But yeah, well, that's the same. Like, once again, they're going to have maybe no Kyrie for the first 2, 4, 6 weeks. We don't know. You know, can Varejao come back and have an impact? Can Mozgov stay healthy? Can Love stay healthy? Yeah, there are a few question marks around this team. If they're in the West, you know, there'd be more question marks, but
definitely
they still should finish the top of the East fairly comfortably and maybe rest these guys down the stretch. But come playoff time, and yeah, when they have to play maybe a Warriors or a Thunder in the final, it's going to be tough for them again.
Yeah, I agree with all that. So they're the team that I think has probably got the second best chance, just because of they're going to have that ability to push through and rest these guys in the East a little bit more than in the West. But I still think that the Thunder are the guys that I want to look at the moment. What about your MVP? There is a lot of worthy candidates, but I was looking at it and thinking, okay, there's a lot of guys. Yeah, this guy could be it. And then I think, oh, maybe not. Maybe he's not the right guy. So there's no clear cut player to me in this race. Who did you tab as your MVP for next season?
Yeah, I was going to go with Steph Curry, because there seems to be a bit of a theme that when you win one, and then if you can have a better season again the next season, then they think, well, the voters think, well, I voted for him last year and he's had a better season, so I better vote for him again. But once again, with OKC, you know, coming from that ninth seed into the playoffs, and I think they'll be, you know, right at the top of the West, led by Kevin Durant. I think he's coming back motivated. Fingers crossed, healthy. But yeah, for me, he's one of, if not the best players in the competition. I'm not saying anything, you know, groundbreaking there or earth shattering. But yeah, what this guy can do on a basketball court is scary. And I think he's going to come back super motivated and take this team back to the top. And now they've got this experience, you know, with Kevin Durant and Westbrook have been there. They're desperate for a championship. I agree. I think Billy Donovan, he'll have an impact, but I think it'll be this core group of players who really drives this team and takes them to the next level.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, when I was thinking MVP, I was actually thinking of Russell Westbrook as one of the guys I was thinking. I'm still a little bit concerned about Durant and his foot. I know people are going to be on me. No, get over it. He's fine. Yeah, okay, let's just wait a couple of months and let's just see how it all pans out before I get on that. So Westbrook was the other guy I was considering, but James Harden to me was the rightful MVP last season, and I think that he is... he's pissed about not being the MVP. He was the Players Association MVP. I think that James Harden is going to go out and put up a pretty special season this season. I think that Houston team is super good. They're stacked. They need a few things to go right injury-wise, but we know that the voters love giving MVP to a player on the best team, and they do have a chance. And you could say the same with Durant and OKC to be the number one seed. The Rockets are a team who could be in that mix. Their team is so talented and so deep. The injuries are a worry, but Harden might get off to a red hot start, carrying this team, ease back into it, and then power this team to a pretty solid record. So he's the guy that I'm going for as my MVP. Rookie of the year, Matt. I'll go ahead.
Just quickly, I had a few people send through their predictions on Twitter throughout the day, and Heath Moss said OKC for champions, Westbrook for MVP, and Kevin Durant for finals MVP. So he's along the Thunder, and I think he even said that he's got money on Westbrook to win the season MVP. So
yeah, I think he did. I saw that.
Popular selection.
I think Westbrook is pretty good odds for Westbrook to win MVP as well, which is. Yeah, I think it's a pretty decent bet. I'd have him probably at number two at the moment. Obviously, Curry and Davis is the next guys as well. I just worry about with the Pelicans and their injury situation. Does the team get high enough in the standings for them to really consider Davis an MVP candidate? Because for some reason, that's what the voters care about. That you have to be a top one or two seed to be considered as an MVP candidate. As wrong as I might think that is, that's the way that it seems to go down. Rookie of the year, Matt.
Do you think the Pelicans will make the playoffs?
Yes, I do. Do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay, well, who's in instead of them?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Oh, okay. Sorry, don't want to spoil anything.
I can't spoil my bold predictions.
All right, Rookie of the Year.
For me, I'm going to go with Emmanuel Mudiay. I just think, once again, like we saw last season with Wiggins, the rookie who can get the consistent minutes and the big minutes right across the season. Moody has got no challenge there for the point guard position. You'll get 30-plus minutes a night. We've already seen during preseason he can put up the counting stats, which we expected coming out of the draft, whether it's the points, the rebounds, the assists. I think he'll do enough. He's got some good competition with Okafor and Karl Anthony Towns, but just for that consistent big minutes, across the whole course of the season, it'll be Emmanuel Mudiay for me.
Okay. I went with Jahlil Okafor. I think that a lot of the times the Rookie of the Year is given to the highest scoring player as a rookie, and I think that Okafor's got a chance to be that. I've seen some odd suggestions thrown out that he's going to be a guy who gets 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 2 blocks, and that is completely something that I would be shocked if he got that high, but 16 and 8 is probably where he goes, and that's a pretty good outing for a rookie. Now, he's looked a little bit shaky in the preseason with some of his performances. He hasn't shot the ball well. He hasn't scored that well, but I think that he's going to be probably the leading scorer out of this rookie group. He's probably between him and Mudiay. Towns is going to be an animal. And did you see that result from the GM survey, I think it was? Who's the best player in the NBA in 5 years' time? Who the winner was?
No, I missed that.
They said Towns.
Over Davis.
Yeah, the best player in 5 years' time will be Karl Anthony Towns, according to NBA. I was shocked. I think he's going to be really, fantastically good, but that's a big call. He hasn't played a game yet. Unless I'm completely misremembering that.
I'd like to see whether the GMs get into a dynasty NBA fantasy draft then.
Yeah, I should hit some of them up. Daryl Morey, you know where to come. We'll start a dynasty league with you, and we'll see how that works out. But that maybe I'm, you know what? Maybe I feel like I'm crazy now. I need to look that up, because that doesn't sound right when I say it out loud. I need to look this up, so just bear with me. Here we go. There's a note on Roto World. Karl Anthony Towns was chosen as the league's best player 5 years from now in the annual GM survey. It feels ludicrous. It feels stupid, doesn't it?
Especially over Davis. We'll see, 21, 22, so he'll be in the prime of his career.
27. I don't get it. We both love Towns, and we think he's going to be top 10 fantasy guy in the next 3 years. Pretty comfortably. We're pretty confident with that. But that's a massive call. I'm going to retweet this out now because it came from Timberwolves PR, apparently. That is something special. Defensive Player of the Year, Matt. How do you see this one panning out?
Yeah. Oh, no. The question was, which rookie will be the best player in 5 years' time?
Well, then, okay,
That's
that makes more sense.
got Karl Anthony Towns 62%, Moutier, Okafor, and Russell all on 10%.
NBA drafts best player. Okay, there we go. So I take back that all that
Yeah.
craziness, because he should be at 90% in that poll then.
Unless there's another question, which player in general, but I can't see it scrolling through here.
Yeah, I think the guys at Roto World misread that tweet, and I read their update and then didn't see that on the tweet as well. So I think that they misread that tweet, because it's clearly what it says. T-Wolves rookie Karl-Anthony Towns projected as 2015 NBA Draft's best player 5 years from now by NBA GMs in annual GM survey. So you can just ignore the last 2 minutes of that conversation.
We'll just edit it out later on. This
Sure,
isn't going live.
you can do that when it's live, I'm sure.
What's the next question?
Defensive player of the
Defensive.
year.
I know you have had your concerns around this guy over the off season. I'm sticking with him. One of my guys, Rudy Gobert. Apologies to Anthony Davis, but I think the Utah Jazz will still be one of the better defensive teams in the league. And Rudy Gobert got, I think it was the fourth on the voting
Yeah, I
last season.
think that sounds about
Pretty
right.
good considering he played or only started the second half of the season. So I'm going to think he continues on with that. And yeah, I'll take Rudy Gobert.
You're right, I am concerned with him. I'm not concerned about his rebound numbers or his block numbers. I'm concerned about the free throw numbers is what's really bothering me, and the fact that as a high second round pick, the fact that his points are going to be so low, and that people are considering him as a guy that, oh, let's draft Rudy Gobert because I want blocks without punting free throws. Well, that might be out of your hands, because he's shooting a pretty high volume, not a pretty high volume, but very high volume, and he's not hitting them well at all. And he's venturing into Dwight Howard sort of territory with the volume and the percentage. He's at about 50 something percent in preseason on about four attempts in like 20 minutes, which at 30, 32 minutes, it's a lot of attempts and it's a lot of misses, and it's an unrecoverable hit in free throw percentage if that plays out. Now, we've heard the air, look, his stroke looks good. He could be a better free throw shooter, but he was only 61% last season, and it hasn't looked good. And he came out and said, he's feeling tired from Eurobasket. Quinn Snyder came out and had a few choice words to say about the team as a whole when they played OKC, that, we're not as good as what people might think we are. This other team's hungry. The Thunder, look, they know what it's like. They know what it's like to be good. We don't know that yet. And he was sort of downplaying expectations. So that's my concern with Gobert, is the free throw percentage, and the fact that you need to draft a stack of points around him, because he may struggle to hit double digits this season. My pick for Defensive Player of the Year is Kawhi Leonard. I think he repeats. He's a super fun guy to watch on defense. I love the perimeter guys getting involved in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation, rather than just putting as a big man, which we saw for quite a few years before Kawhi won it last season. I think he's taking a leap into becoming an elite player. If he's not already there, he's going to up his offensive output. I think his defense stays right on that same level. And if he just provides the same sort of stuff that he did last year, I think he wins it again. And it's not a very controversial pick, but he's a joy to watch defensively.
Yeah, Kawhi Leonard stole it from Draymond Green. DeAndre Jordan was third. Anthony Davis was fourth. And Rudy Gobert was fifth.
Let's
And
go back. He didn't
Rudy
steal
Gobert.
off Draymond Green.
Did you like that one?
Yeah, just a subtle throw in there.
Rudy Gobert only polled two more votes than Andrew Bogut.
Bogut was really good. He was so underrated last season, and people remember the fact that he was benched for those last couple of games in the playoffs. But Andrew Bogut was fantastic last season. He's such a good passer for that team. He's an elite defender. Yes, he's had injury concerns. Yes, he has mobility concerns. But even in the playoffs, he was great. He was a key factor in the Memphis series when they did that thing where they switched him onto Tony Allen, and just really sort of change things around with the dynamics of that team. He was superb all season. Where are we at now? Let's get into some of the more interesting discussions. I want to talk about first time All Stars, Matt. Who do you think is going to be an All Star for the first time this season?
I've got three guys, and they're all out of the Eastern Conference, being the weaker conference. I think there'll be more opportunity there for some of these guys. First one is Andre Drummond at the Pistons, just going to have a massive season there, with Greg Monroe now at the Bucks. Second guy, I know you're once again super high on this guy, Victor Oladipo at the Magic. I'll expect him to make his first All-Star. And a nice little roughy or smoky for you, I'm going to take Nerlens Noel as well from Philly. I reckon he's a chance to make the last one or two roster spots there in the Eastern Conference.
Nerlens Noel is going to be a beast, especially from a fantasy point of view. He's going to put up some pretty good numbers. His offensive game looks much improved. His percentages should be better this season. He's going to rack up. He got six steals the other day. He's going to block shots. He's going to get steals. His scoring is going to go up. His rebounding should go up as well. I think that he's going to be a really, really good fantasy guy. He is the guy that I think people will think would have considered as Rudy Gobert, the block shot guy who doesn't necessitate a free throw punt. I think that he is looking more like that guy this year than what Gobert is looking, because he has shown a significant improvement in his free throws, whereas Gobert is struggling in that spot at the moment. So I think that he is going to be a bit of a shock to people with how good he is this season. I think I like those picks. I only had one of those doubled up, and that was Victor Oladipo. I think Nikola Mirotic can push for an All-Star berth this season. Maybe that's being a bit ludicrous, but if he gets the minutes, and there's almost zero reason to think that he's not going to be a huge part of the Chicago team this season. And for people who still think that he's stuck behind Taj Gibson, you're wrong. He is going to be a significant part of this team. He's going to score. He's going to do flashy things. He's going to rebound. He's going to block shots. He's going to score a lot. He's going to hit threes, and he's going to have a ton of hype as this guy who provides a lot of highlight sort of plays and highlight, you know, red hot. Mirotic is, you know, just racking up points and getting to the line. I think that he is a chance in the East along with Oladipo. I think there's two Western Conference guys that I want to mention as well. Kawhi Leonard hasn't been an All-Star yet, which I think has to be rectified this season. And the other guy that I think is in for a monster season is Gordon Hayward. He looks fantastic. He is the leader of this team on the Jazz. He is going to put up pretty significant numbers this season. I think it's going to be hard to keep him out of the All-Star team as well. What do you think of those guys? Any comments there?
I was just going through last season's trying to work out who falls out.
That's the problem.
Yeah, out of the West, I think Tim Duncan and Dirk Nowitzki are the obvious two to come out of the West. So Steph, and Kobe Bryant as a starter, but he was in because was it James Harden or someone was injured? Is that right?
No, well, Kobe didn't play. He was injured.
Kobe got loaded, and then was injured.
Yeah, that's right.
Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol, Blake Griffin. LaMarcus Aldridge off the bench. Borderline. Tim Duncan, probably not. Kevin Durant, definitely. Klay Thompson should be. Russell Westbrook, definitely. Harden, yes. Chris Paul, yes. Cousins, yes. Damian Lillard would be an interesting one.
I think that Damian Lillard gets in. I think he's going to be. He's gotten in the last two seasons. I think he still does.
And then in the East it was Wall, Kyle Lowry, LeBron, Gasol, and Melo, and the reserves Horford, Bosch, and Millsap. They could be interesting. We saw Atlanta have one, two, three, four of their guys being the best team in the Eastern Conference. Jimmy Butler, you'll talk about him in a minute. Josh, Dwayne Wade, borderline. Jeff Teague, maybe. Kyrie Irving, probably not, depending on injury, and Kyle Korver, probably not. So I think there's going to be a massive turnover there in the Eastern Conference All-Stars. Yeah,
I can see that happening. There's going to be a lot of guys that change teams in the East, so we'll see how that all pans out. Now, surprise playoff teams, Matt. Who do you think is now? We can say, the Thunder's going to get back into the playoffs. The Heat is going to get back into the playoffs. They're not surprised. Who do you think is it now? Because the Bucks were a surprise playoff team last year. They were the worst team in the NBA, and they got into the playoffs. They didn't even sneak in as the eighth seed. They got in pretty comfortably. Do you have any one or two teams you think, throw it out there, they're going to be a surprise to get in the playoffs?
Okay, so in the West, can we agree that Portland and Dallas will drop out of last year's playoffs?
Yes.
Okay. So, and OKC, they naturally go in. I've still got a question mark over the Pelicans. I just don't think they've got the depth now. I wasn't sure with Tyreek, before Tyreek got injured. Now I'm really not sure, really not confident that they'll even make the playoffs. This is one of my bold predictions. I actually think the Sacramento Kings will make the playoffs this season.
Interesting. I had them as well. Yep. I had them as a surprise as well. I said I don't think they're going to get in, but I think if anyone's going to take the eighth seed, who I think is, it's probably Utah's at the moment, I think that the Kings, I still think the Pelicans get in. I think that the Kings are that team who could be a surprise, given the negative publicity they got over the preseason, and rightly so. I think the Kings could be a playoff team this year as well.
Yeah, the Kings will be in a group with like the Suns, the Jazz, as you mentioned, the Lakers won't make it, the Timberwolves are still too young. So Sacramento could jump up and be a 20-win better team than last season, and yeah, really, really spoiled. On paper, they got a really good team and a really deep team.
Yeah,
and that's where I think they'll get over the Pelicans.
Just a quick comment on the Kings as well. Is Ben McLemore, George Karl came out today and said that Ben McLemore is going to play less minutes than last season, so much for him having a breakout season. He can pretty much be dropped in 10-team leagues, I would say, depending on who you're picking up. And 12-team leagues, he's no longer a must-own guy. If he's going to get less than... He played 32 minutes a game last season, and Karl was adamant he was going to get less than that. Darren Collison has played his brains out. So has Marco Bellinelli in preseason, and both those guys will play the two. We could see a situation where McLemore is less than 30 minutes a game, so he's not a must-hold for me in 12-team leagues anymore. I think that you can probably find someone better, even if it's... You know, if you want to go short-term and grab John Jenkins for 2 weeks, or you want to grab Nate Robinson for 2 weeks, I'm okay with dropping McLemore, because if he's going to have this sort of limited role, he wasn't a guy that's really shown us. I was owning him for, let's hope this guy breaks out, let's hope something happens, but this news is not great for me.
I think you still own him in our listener league, don't you?
I do still own him, yes. That may change overnight.
Yeah, I'm going to have to revisit that as well, because I reckon I've got him in a 12 team in our Superstars of Fantasy team, so you and I will both be, maybe we can discuss it and work out who we pick up in different leagues.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you who I'm picking up in that if it goes through, because we've got a fab auction that's happening overnight. I'm because of the way my team's structured, I'm actually adding Chris Humphries for him.
Ooh,
I'm not going to say I'm not going to say how much I'm putting on Chris Humphries. If someone wants to go out there and add Humphries, they're more than welcome to try and, yeah, beat me to it. But based on the way my team is structured, I think that I will that at this stage, that's who I've got a waiver claim on to drop McLemore for. So if you're in the Stacey Augman division, that's what's happening.
Yeah, I know who I'm going to pick up as well, but I can't tell you. So if anyone wants to know, tweet me in 12 hours, and I'll tell you who I'm picking up.
Cool. Where are we at now? That's our surprise playoff teams. Let's get to the next part of it. Three bold predictions. Let's go with you with one, then me with one.
Well, I've got three predictions, and not necessarily that bold, but then one of my bold predictions was Sacramento Kings to make the playoffs.
That's it.
One of my not so bold predictions is Anthony Davis to lead the league in scoring this season.
That's relatively bold. It's not sure. Absurd, but I think that you wouldn't say that he's the favorite to do that.
Who's the favorite? Harden?
I would think that Durant still is.
Yep.
Yeah, I would think that Durant. Well, there's Harden, there's Westbrook, there's Melo, who can definitely contend for that title as well. I'd say that all of those guys would be ahead of Davis at this point in terms of favoritism.
The only thing I'll say about Durant and then Westbrook is I think they're going to be the Golden State Warriors of last season, where they just blow out so many teams by 3 points.
That's true.
And that means Durant and Westbrook are going to be sitting in that last quarter, which is probably a good thing, because then Durant's going to get his rest. Hopefully play 30 or 32 minutes a night, and that will prevent him from missing games down the stretch. So that would be my concern around Durant's scoring ability.
I can see that being a concern. Okay, so that's your... Where am I? I've lost my where I am. Okay, so that's your bold prediction. My first bold prediction is that Russell Westbrook leads the league in assists. Now, he averaged a fair few last season, but you know, the consensus guy who's going to do it is Chris Paul, who does it pretty much every season. You'd say that John Wall's probably second favorite. Reggie Jackson's probably right up there. But I think that Westbrook can go, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, I think he can push double-digit assists, at least 9 this season anyway. I think he's got such an array of talent to throw the ball to now, as well as what he can do offensively. You know, people are going to be dragged into him. Like, when he starts exploding to the lane, people are going to gravitate to him because they've seen what he can do. That's going to allow kickouts to guys. Barker can now shoot. Kant is there that should shoot. We know what Durant can do. Morrow, Singler, Augustine, Payne. Like, I can just keep going through the names of guys that he can kick it out to. I think that he's a chance to lead. It's bold. It's probably not going to happen, but I think that Westbrook could lead the league in assists, and which would be fantastic for a guy that everyone labels as a ball hog.
I love it. I've got the same. I reckon one of my predictions: Russell Westbrook to average at least 10 assists per game this season.
Yep. It's on the cards. There's just so much. It's not on the cards, but again, we wouldn't be shocked. And it's going out on a bit of a limb, but he's going to put up some pretty good numbers. I'm pretty sure. He's going to probably average 5 turnovers a game, but that's okay. We can deal with that. I think. I hope we can. Anyway.
Still at an assist to turnover, that's 2, which is still better than James Harden at 1.7, 1.8.
That's right. It's still pretty good. Now,
I had a guy contact me on Twitter last week, and this is just a case of where you need to know your league settings, because he was playing in a league with triple doubles, with assist to turnover, and another category. I can't remember what it was, and he had pick 3. And he tweeted me, and he said, "Am I crazy to pick Russell Westbrook at 3? And I said, "No, you're not crazy at all. You've got triple doubles. And Russell Westbrook's assist to turnover is better than James Harden. And the other category was offensive rebounds. And Russell Westbrook is a very, very good offensive rebounder.
For a guard,
let alone for a guard. So just a case of, just know your league settings, your scorings. And in this case, Russell Westbrook was the third best player there in the draft, and I'm pretty sure he got him there.
Yeah, I think it's taking a risk, but it's also knowing your league settings and being able to exploit those, and that's fine. Don't take Harden at 3 just because he's the third player on ADP lists. Like, if your league has a different format, you've got to do it what makes sense for your league, and that's definitely a beautiful pick. My next bold prediction is Nikola Mirotic averages 20 points a game. This ties in with my all-star pick with him. Again, this has probably got about a 2% chance of happening, but he is that offensively talented that he's probably going to be the second best offensive player on that team behind Jimmy Butler. And I know power's still there, but again, this is a bold prediction. I think that Mirotic grabs the league by the balls and starts really starting to show what he can do.
By the balls or by the balls?
Either. Whichever one you prefer. Whichever pronunciation you prefer.
I hope you're right. I own Nikola Mirotic in 4 leagues already. Hopefully that'll be 5 on the weekend.
I don't think I own him anywhere. I'm going to target him tonight, though, on this auction.
My next bold prediction is Steph Curry to make 300 three-pointers this season.
What did he make last season? 280?
286, I think, off the top of my head.
Okay. It's not crazy at all. What's he got to average? About 3.5? Oh, more than that. 3.6 or 3.7?
Something like that.
Yeah. But at least he can play more than 31 minutes a game.
And that's it. Probably he should play more minutes because his teams will hopefully catch up to the Warriors. Means he'll have to play more fourth quarters. He might have to go out the 34 minutes a game. So could be the first man to break the magical 300 number.
Yep, I think he'd have to hit a lot of threes, clearly, but it's not out of the realm of possibility at all for him to do this. So I like that one. My next one, Matt, I reckon is probably going to cause a little bit of consternation, especially from you. And that is that I don't think Jimmy Butler finishes the season as a top 20 fantasy player. Didn't think you'd be a fan of that. Now, over on Basketball Monster, in 8 category leagues, we've got him projected as 22nd at the moment, so maybe it's not that bold. I think that the drop-off in minutes for him, he's clearly going to play less minutes. I know the pace has increased, but is it enough to offset a drop of 3 to 4 minutes a game? I don't think it's quite enough there. He hasn't looked great in preseason. He took a historic jump last season, a massive jump. If you look at his per 36 numbers from last season and the year before, his scoring just went through the roof. His percentages went way up. To think that he's going to get better than that, I think it's pretty tough for me to go, he's going to get improved upon that. I think that he probably regresses slightly in some of those areas. And to me, that puts him outside the top 20. Now, you're going to have some sort of argument to refute that, I'm pretty sure. But I'm not into Jimmy Butler. And as I said, I'm a Bulls fan, so I love Jimmy Butler. But I'm not into Jimmy Butler at picking him at pick 12 or anything like that. I don't want him at that spot.
I'm still confident in him. I still think he put up similar numbers to last season. Yes, the minutes will come back, but I think the increase in offensive tempo will counteract that. With the injury to Derrick Rose or a potential injury, I think Jimmy Butler will take over the ball handling there. And I think his assists can come up a little bit, maybe touching the 4 mark and the 3s as well. We've seen an increase in 3-point shooting this preseason, so there's no reason why Butler couldn't go to maybe 1.2 to 1.5 three-pointers per game.
Jimmy Butler has had a really rough preseason. He's shooting 34% from the field and 13% from 3 in his 28 minutes a game through 7 games. This is not something that's likely to continue in this realm, but he hasn't looked good really at all. Now, what he's done, he's got his assist numbers, they've gone higher, but everything else has been significantly lower. So his efficiency numbers, which was something that really helped him last season get this high ranking, his, you know, high free throws, his high field goal percentage, they've dropped off. You know, his field goal percentage is 13% less. His free throws are 6% less. He's shooting 24% less from three. Again, this is a 7-game preseason sample size, but he hasn't looked great. And I imagine there's going to be a little bit of regression this season, not to that degree. And you know, the loss of 4 minutes is why I think that he... Look, he might finish 21, he might finish 25. It's not a horrible season, but I just don't think that he's going to be a top 20 player this season. I think in my ranks, I've got him like low 20s. Not like, I mean, high 20s. 25, 27, 28, that sort of range. And that's where I think he's going to end up. So yeah, that's I'm sure most people will disagree with me on that, but that's my take on Jimmy Butler. Matt, first player to be traded this season.
Can I have another prediction?
Go ahead, go.
CJ McCollum will be top 10 in three-pointers made.
Okay. So what do you think he needs to average to get to that 2.5, 2.7?
Well, let's see what happened last season. I reckon he can go 2.2.
Okay.
But he's going to be chucking up, him and Lillard, just going to be chucking up a ridiculous amount of three-pointers.
I've got him projected at 2 a game.
I reckon he can crack the top 10. And when I bring up my list, and we look at some of the names from last season, sort by 3-pointers made. So obviously we still have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, James Harden, Damian Lillard will be in there. Kyle Korver probably will still be in the top 10. Trevor Ariza, Danny Green, Wes Matthews will drop out. Robert Covington probably should be around the mark. J.R. Smith, I reckon we'll be top 10 as well. Kyrie Irving was 12 last year. He'll drop out. But yeah, so in terms of it's pushing 2.4, so Robert Covington, Danny Green, Trevor Ariza, Damian Lillard all average 2.4 threes per game. So that's around the mark he needs to get to be top 10. I reckon he's going to be very, very close, Joshua.
Yeah, that's definitely not... That's not too crazy. I've got him at 2 a game, so he's got that potential to go above that, and that's fine. He could definitely push that area. And he's a very good 3-point shooter. He's like a close to 40% 3-point shooter. That's probably the biggest strength of his game, his ability to hit the three. Now, first player to be traded. Who do you like for that? And it's almost impossible to. And I was writing my answer out for this, I thought, okay, first player to be traded. Well, there's probably going to be two players traded at the same time, but I've gone for one as the sort of the bigger name guy. Who did you go with yours?
Well, unfortunately, it can't be Luke Ridnow because he's not on the roster anymore.
No.
But, well, I've got a few names here. I reckon it'll be a power forward now. Markieff Morris naturally comes to mind with the issues he's had with the Suns. Taj Gibson is also on the top of the list there at the Bulls.
Yep, they need to move him
and find minutes for Bobby Portis. Wouldn't surprise me to see Houston make an early season trade and get rid of either Terrence Jones or Monta Ellis as well, with both of them being restricted free agents. So there's sort of my guys. In terms of a team, it really wouldn't surprise me to see the Pelicans make an early season move just to bolster their roster somehow, whether that's trading Ryan Anderson or Eric Gordon, or maybe I probably can't move a sheet because of his contract, but just... Yeah, one of these guys to get a few more healthy bodies back in return.
That's everything you said there makes complete sense. The guy I went with the power forward way as well, and that's Kenneth Faried is the guy that I think is going to be the first player to be traded. Taj Gibson was the other guy that I tossed up. He's probably pretty close, but Faried, I like a lot of the other Denver guys that don't like Faried a huge amount. A lot of people are big on Faried. I just don't think that he's a very good NBA player. I don't think he's ever an all-star caliber player, and I think that's what some people in Denver seem to want him to become. I just don't think he's going to be that. I could see him getting traded as the first guy this year. I'll probably be wrong, but that's when we're picking out of a player pool of 400 people where it's going to be hard to pick that one guy. What about coaches to be fired? Who's the first guy to be fired?
I'm going to go with your mate Byron Scott from the Lakers.
You know what? I had his name and then I crossed it out, and I think that's completely fair enough. They have no expectations, though, so maybe that saves him for another season. He should have been fired last season. He should have been fired before he started, basically, but the fact that he survived after last season is ridiculous. He can't continue after this year, and he should be fired at some point. As much as I don't want him to lose a job, I don't want people losing jobs by any means, but he is just not a good fit for this league. My guy is Dwayne Casey as a guy to be fired because of similar reasons. I think if he mishandles this roster again, they've made some changes. I think he mishandled a lot of stuff last season. The team quit on him towards the end of the season. They imploded. I think that Casey is under significant pressure to perform. He's got huge amounts of expectations in comparison to Byron Scott. Where are we now, Matt? Let's see. Okay. The last one of our predictions before we do a couple of over-unders. Pick one player who's outside the current top 50 that has a chance, no matter how small of a chance, do you think that could become a top 20 player? This is sort of a bold prediction sort of thing. You don't think it's going to happen, but who's one guy outside the top 50 that can become a top 20 guy? Because we know there was two guys last year, or maybe three, it depends how you classify your top 20, with Draymond Green, Pau Gasol, and Jimmy Butler, all being outside the top 50 who ended up around that top 20 mark. Who's a guy this year that you think that is, if you needle in the haystack sort of style, who's that guy? I think I know your answer, but go ahead.
It's not Mirotic.
Brad Beal is my answer for you.
No, it could have been Brad Beal. He's definitely a contender. So is Nikola Mirotic. This guy, I have to clarify this because he's inside my top 50 rankings, but in terms of Yahoo ADP and Yahoo rankings, and I'm pretty sure even still ESPN rankings, he's outside the top 50, and that's Reggie Jackson.
Yep.
Does he qualify?
No, that's fine. He's been outside. He probably doesn't go in drafts anywhere outside the top 50, but he's ranked outside the top 50 on a lot of places, so I'm okay with that.
He's got Yahoo ADP of 72 still, which is closely linked to his ranking. Well, it was. I think he's now 58 or 59 off the top of my head. But if he can go sort of 18 points, 5 rebounds, 10 assists with a steal and a 3, similar to like he did last season with the Pistons, then I'm pretty confident he'll be a top 20 player. Now, to be a top 20 guy, you don't necessarily have to be elite in the category, like, you know, Eric Bledsoe, just strong across the board, but it certainly helps. And being elite in assists, that can put him right up there with guys like Chris Paul, John Wall, and Westbrook in terms of those assist numbers. Now, it also depending on what happens with Kyrie Irving and Jeff Teague this season, Jackson could very well go into next season being the sixth best point guard in the league behind Curry, Westbrook, Paul, Wall, and Lillard. So if he can get the 10 assists, I reckon that'll justify him as a top 20 player next season.
Yeah, I love that pick. I've got Reggie Jackson in a stack of leagues this season for that very reason. Those assist numbers are going to be huge. He's going to score a lot. Him and Drummond are going to be a dynamic combination, I think, together. They're going to be really, really good. So I love that pick. The guy that I went with was probably a little bit more risky, and that's Chandler Parsons. Risky because we don't know when he's going to be back. We don't know what he's going to be like when he's back, but I think that you can get him. Now, if you're drafting on ESPN ranks, he's ranked 29th, which is stupid. We're not picking him at 29. But if you're getting him at 70 or 80, which I think is probably the right spot to get him, he is going to be a pretty significant focal point in Dallas. I think that he should be the number one option on that team. He'll distribute the ball a lot. He gets rebounds. He's got a pretty friendly fantasy game. He was top 45 in Houston the two seasons before he came to Dallas. I know he can have a bigger role in Dallas this season. He can get rebounds, steals, he can block, he hits threes, he scores, he can get assists. He could push 4 assists a game as well as a small forward. He needs to have a pretty big offensive outburst, similar to a Jimmy Butler from last season. That sort of, he gets to 18 points, 19 points, then he pushes that. But Dirk's going to be limited this year. Tyson Chandler's gone. We know where's Matthews? We know his situation. If Parsons is back, and again, it's a bit of an if, I think that he can become a top 20 player. A lot of things have to go right. So that's sort of one where if he slides far enough, if he slides into the 80s, then I think that I want a lot of Chandler Parsons at that spot.
And if you're predicting Nikola Mirotic to average 20 points a game, and assuming that that's going to mean on pretty big minutes, and he could go 8 rebounds, 1.5 to 1.8 threes with a steal and a block, an awesome free throw percentage, he could very well be in the top 20, 25 as well.
I think I've got him currently projected. I think in my ranks he's about 31st at the moment anyway. But yeah, he could easily be a top 20 guy. But I'd already spoken about him, so I wanted to go with someone different. But you're right that you can get him pretty late, and he could be a top. I've gone hard on Mirotic as a first time All Star, as scoring 20 points. Talked about him enough, so throw Chandler Parsons there. But you're right, Mirotic is definitely a guy for that sort of thing. Now, what we wanted to do, Matt, is round out this podcast with a couple of over unders, not game not game wins or season win totals. We'll just talk about players. Damian Lillard, 24 points, over, under.
We originally had this at 25, and I was taking the under because I was going to say he would score 24 points a game. So I will go over and say he scores 24.2 points per game.
I'm going to go the under marginally. He scored 21 a game last year. I think it increases from that a bit, but I think he gets up to just a bit below 24, maybe 23, 23 and a half for Lillard there. Kevin Love at 18 points.
And again, you had this at 20 and I was going to take the under. I'll still take the under just.
I will as well.
It's pretty close. I like that figure there. You should work in Vegas or somewhere.
I should. I'm just honing my line setting abilities here. But yeah, I think that Kevin Love gets probably 17 to 17 and a half points, and that's, you know, I set these initial lines when we did it as I was at work, and then I came home and just adjusted, just tweaked it a little bit, just to make it a little bit more interesting. But yeah, I think that he goes under. Nick Vucevic, one block a game. Sounds stupid for a center, but he was at 0.7 blocks per game last season. Do you think he can go over?
I do. I hope so. Now with Scott Skiles there, maybe bringing a slightly defensive-minded attitude to the Magic. I'll take the over on that. I'll back him in and say Vucevic can go 1 to 1.1.
Yes, I agree. I think that he can get to a block a game as well. I think that he takes the Jonas Valanciunas block numbers step that Valanciunas did last season. I think that he can be that guy. This one's a little bit more controversial, Matt. Maybe not controversial is the wrong word. Al Horford, over 1.3 a game.
This one's very easy. That's definitely under. Al Horford only hit 11 three-pointers last season, so there's no way he's going to 82. I like him better at around 0.5. I reckon he could go, you know, 30, 40, 50 range for the whole season. So that's definite under for me.
It's an under for me as well. But he is, the reason I said it at one is he is shooting in 21 minutes a game in preseason. He's hit one a game. And I thought that was, I think that's odd that he's at hitting that or shooting that many. He was a guy that could, he's not completely adverse to threes. He hit some last season. He said 11. It's not zero. It's not a great number. But to get to 80 is probably a stretch. But he's on one a game pace throughout the preseason. The next one was over under Westbrook 8 assists. I think we both know where we sit there. We're both clearly over on Westbrook at 8 assists. Anthony Davis at 3 blocks, over under.
Once again, very close. He was, 2.9 last season.
Yep.
So with the Alvin Gentry offense leading to more up and down the court possessions, I'll take the over.
I'm going with the under just. Darren Williams, over under 14 points.
I'll take the under unless he plays one game and scores 15 points and then sits out the rest of the season. But as long as he plays, say, 40 games a season or 40 games this season, I'll take under just.
I will take the under just as well. As much as I'm banking, and people, I said someone tweet at me today, I think it was Daniel Lewis who was on the podcast earlier this off-season doing a preview show, said, heard the podcast and you're all in on Darren. I'm not all in on Darren. I'm in on Darren Williams picking him at pick 85 because I think that he can return value at that point. I'm not in on Darren Williams being a star or anything like that. I think that he's under the 14 points, but I think 14 and 6 at pick or 13 and a half and 6 at pick 85 is pretty decent value. So I think that he's still going under there. And the last one, Matt, Emmanuel Mudiay, over under 6 assists.
I'll take the under just. I like him sort of around the 5 mark a little bit more. 6 assists for a point guard is a pretty good rate. And I don't think he's going to be quite there in his rookie season. So just under for me.
I go over. I'm over on Moody. I think I've got him projected at 6.5 assists. So I think he goes there. And just one quick one, Matt, a question without notice that came in from Jeff Padre. Thanks again, Josh, in relation to something else. Some moron just dropped Michael Carter-Williams. Do you think I should pick him up or pick up Jeremy Lin?
Oh, dear. Why are people dropping Michael Carter-Williams? I know his preseason has been poor, but yes, go and add Michael Carter-Williams.
Yep, yeah, adding Michael Carter-Williams over Jeremy Lin. Now, Jeff, I don't know if you're listening, but I will reply to you on Twitter about that as well. But yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, don't make this is the thing again. Once the season starts next week, there are going to be some stupid moves, some stupid drops, some stupid trade offers. Take advantage of it. the first week or two, you're going to see some really dumb stuff go down, and take advantage of it, and then you can really sort of get a leg up in your league. And that's, if someone's gone early and they've gone with a preemptive drop of Michael Carter-Williams through preseason, and that's not going to work out. Matt, we are done on today's podcast. I need to get this done and get this edited because I've got a draft coming up in 40 minutes. So we'll see how, with zero preparation, we'll see how that goes.
Zero preparation. You've only been preparing for the last 4 months.
Let me rephrase. Zero preparation for this particular league. But yes, I have been preparing pretty solidly since the end of the regular season last season. But zero preparation in terms of what's my bidding strategy and how am I doing it in this league. Now, remember to check out Matt and myself on allstar5.com, see what we've got to offer over there. Hardwood Paroxysm with a stack of basketball stuff. Their season preview magazine is out, which is fantastic. Basketball Monster, of course, is a fantastic website where you can access a lot of tools and projections and articles and forums and all that sort of stuff. And Moneyball is the last one I want to mention for Australian and New Zealand players who want to get involved in daily fantasy. Check out the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball League, which is up on the in the lobby at the moment, and get involved and put some money on the line against myself and some other listeners of the podcast. Matt, remind everyone your Twitter handle.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at SmanSports. Thanks, Josh. We'll talk to you in the next week or so, and good luck for your draft and everyone else's draft across the weekend.
Thank you, Matt. Yes, good luck to everyone who is drafting. The season is near. We're less than a week to go. There'll be a few more podcasts before the season starts, and what we're going to do with the season is the day before, the first day of the regular season, I will have a short podcast talking about weekly lineups, that sort of stuff, as well as some daily fantasy content for the opening nights of games. And then we get into the full regular season rundown of what we do in the podcast after opening night. So make sure you are subscribing. Make sure you have left a review on iTunes. That is always fantastic when you guys do that. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_bball. Matt mentioned he's already S-Man Sports, so get over there and follow him. Matt, thank you once again.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.